Dan, I'm going to start with you. I think most of us in communities like Springfield, Peoria, Rockford, other places probably realize that there is segregation. I think maybe are a bit surprised when we see where Illinois ranks on a national level.
I lived in downstate Illinois for a number of years, too, and obviously the towns are segregated, but it's hard to know how out of the ordinary that is until you sort of step back a little bit and take the national perspective. It really is stark, and that was why it was good to have a team of reporters on this. So Brian has lived in the Northeast in California, so when he saw it, it was very shocking to him, whereas it's something that a lot of us just take for granted if that's what you grew up with.
There's some assumptions that we think of segregation as this vestige of the past, this thing that's almost something we teach in history classes. And we forget that for a lot of these communities, especially the industrial communities, oftentimes the situation about segregation is almost like frozen. And it's been frozen to some degree over a course of decades. And I think that that's the part that when you start to look at, you know, the data points and you start to get on the ground, you start seeing this a scenario in which the conditions that we think about historically are still very much present in the physical spaces that people occupy.
Let's talk about some of those reasons. I think you both have written in there in this series that this is not by chance and that local governments have played a role in keeping segregation going in most of these towns.
I think that's right, Sean. I think one of the things that you don't think about is if it's always been done this way, you're not really thinking about what you would need to change that. So, you know, there were racist policies of the past, like redlining and, you know, just other sort of discrimination in lending and that type of deal, which may have started the separation of races in these cities. But as it goes forward, if you notice the patterns, you know, the investment keeps going to new areas to where white residents go. Some of the historically black neighborhoods struggle to get investment. You know, it continues, but it doesn't seem like it's different because that's sort of, you know, the generally speaking, the black side of town has always been more poor and the white side of town has been, you know, more affluent.
When we're talking about these two sides of town, I think you point this out as well. Almost all of these communities have a real geographic dividing line. There's maybe it's a street or a railroad or something that tends to divide white and black.
Yeah, it was very clear in a couple of the communities, Springfield Railroad Track and in Champaign, we noted University Avenue, and in Rockford, the river, although that's not as that is not as hard and fast. There's some folks that live on what is considered, you know, the white side of the river. You know, it's interesting when you just talk about this, is that it does become accepted, and I think there's a part of it that starts to begin to accept that the conditions of certain people just fit a preconceived narrative we have about race and class and those things, and so we begin to accept that, and it becomes normal to us.
One other thing that was striking to, I think, both of us is, you know, if you're on the white side of town, you may never go to the black side of town. It may be 2 miles away, and, you know, you may go months without going there, and vice versa. And, I mean, it just sort of shows those patterns of segregation, and that, you know, if you aren't actively looking for it or at it, then it may be easy to forget if you're not actively pursuing that. And I think that also leads to sort of this, the reason why it doesn't change is because people are comfortable where they are, and why change the status quo.
I'm talking with Dan Vock and also Brian Charles. They're both reporters for Governing Magazine, and they have done a series after a 6-month-long investigation into segregation and why it persists so heavily here in Illinois, especially in communities like Springfield and other central Illinois towns, or maybe Rockford, for example. And Brian, one of the things you touched on was black side of town versus the white side of town. And I know I have talked to white residents who will often say, well, why don't people on the other side of town, why don't they fix up that neighborhood? Why don't they do something more with it? Because it does look more run down. There's not as much opportunity there. Why don't they do something about it?
Well, the issue then becomes, when you have disinvestment in the community and you have decades of disinvestment in the community, What capital are you going to work with to actually make that community stronger? You know, we looked at Springfield, for example, and we looked at places on the west side of Springfield in which home prices in predominantly black neighborhoods, which were nice, which were kept up, which were, very well maintained, you know, cul-de-sacs, that kind of thing, things we think about when we think about affluent, you know, suburban neighborhoods, in which those home prices were dramatically lower than what we found on the other side of Springfield, in which the home prices in similarly looking neighborhoods, homes that were of a similar size, were dramatically more valuable. And that value was very much attached to, you know, the demographics surrounding the neighborhood. The demographics were poor, the demographics were black, the demographics in, you know, maybe in some cases were lower income and, you know, lower middle class. But race became really the through line there that said, this is how much money you're going to get for your home, and this is how much money someone on the other side of town is going to get for their home. And without that investment, without that capital to work with, it is very hard for you to scale up the type of investment you need in the community to bring in things like grocery stores, to bring in jobs, to bring in, you know, any of those things. I mean, you don't have to look too deep in the news beyond what we've done to see exactly where corporate investment has gone as far as, you know, your headquarters for companies and whatnot. They're not going to communities that have suffered from disinvestment for decades. They're going to communities that are already affluent.
And Sean, there's a little bit there where there's both private investment and public investment. If you look at some of the neighborhoods in, say, the east side of Springfield, as Brian mentioned, there are some very nice neighborhoods. There are also neighborhoods on that side that have, you know, no sidewalks, no curbs, poor lighting. The infrastructure isn't there. The lots are small. There are a lot of vacant houses. So the development is moving towards bigger lots on the new development out west, and that is easier to attract investment from. If you're going on the east side, you're talking about, you know, rundown streets that, you know, with small lots, a lot of infrastructure challenges that you don't have on the west side. So there's both public and private. You know, the east side, the public investment they get are housing projects, tax credits to build low-income housing. On the west side, you know, you're getting, you know, developers building out, you know, brand new subdivisions.
Well, Dan, talk a little bit about schools. That's another factor in all of this. And I thought it was pretty stunning to find that Peoria schools, the Peoria Public School District, you listed as the most segregated in the nation.
It's not the school district itself. What we are looking at is the metro area, so across the entire Peoria metropolitan area. So the one thing that's very striking is that within Peoria, schools, they do, you know, a decent job. They still have segregation, but it's not as stark as across the entire metropolitan area. So one thing that you'll hear about are desegregation lawsuits that try to get, like, Champaign or Springfield still under a desegregation order from the 70s. And that's all within these sort of central core areas. But what's happening is that white residents are leaving the district completely. Now, a lot of times, in the case of Peoria, they're going to Dunlap School District and still have a Peoria address. But the city has sprawled far enough away from the center of the city that it's now, the new development is out in, you know, new school districts. And that's happened in Springfield, too. On the fringes of Springfield, you know, there's Chatham and there's Pleasant Plains, and there's just a whole bunch of development outside of the core school district. And what that means is that the schools themselves in the urban, the core urban areas, are becoming more and more black, while the white students are sort of fleeing out to, you know, the exurbs or the, you know, farm towns or even the fringes of the city that they're on. So that's really the important thing to keep in mind, is that you can't just look within one school district, because sometimes those school district boundaries are fueling segregation. So in that case of the two houses, one on the east side and one on the west side of Springfield, one of the big differences is that the east side school, the house is in the Springfield School District, and the west side, which you wouldn't know from looking at it, is actually on a school, you know, 8 miles away.
One of the sources that you spoke with used the term unintended racism. I thought that was interesting. Can you explain what they're getting at there?
I think the source we're referring to is Kate Pistuccia, who is an elected official in Peoria County. She was referring to the fact that a lot of her parents that she knows, a lot of her neighbors, are in effect saying to themselves, "Hey, listen, this situation in Peoria is not going to work out for my child. I want what I think is a higher quality education, and I'm moving on to another school district." They may not be intentionally doing something that they say they don't want to send their kids to school with black children, or but what they're doing in effect is they're taking their children out of the school district, and with that, oftentimes, because we have a disparity in resources in Illinois and across the country, they're taking their resources with them. And so it's not an intentional situation in which somebody says, "I don't like these folks, I don't want to go to school with them." But the impact for them is to reinforce the tiered system that we currently have.
Before we run out of time, I do want to give both of you the opportunity to weigh in on this, and that is, what do you hope people take away from this? I think, again, as we mentioned at the start, people understand there is segregation that is in place and has been for generations in many of these communities. What do you hope they learn from looking at the numbers and the stories that you're telling?
I think there's a few things. One, I think it's important to realize that segregation isn't just Chicago or St. Louis or Gary, that this happens across the country, but especially in the Midwest and the Northeast. Second of all, that public policy by local officials, even today, matters. And so where you're developing, where development is allowed to go, where you're investing your taxpayer money, and where you're siting, new developments, all that still matters. And the other thing is that, conversely to that, is even though the public policy reinforces all this and makes it harder to sort of break out of the system, individual choices matter. As Brian was saying, when you move your kid out of a predominantly or a minority school district and you move across the river, then your resources go with you, as a white parent, then that has an effect. As when you and your friends and everybody else, all your neighbors, do the same thing, that's how you get disinvestment in communities. That's how you get segregated neighborhoods.
What I would hope, though, and I think all of us have hoped this, is that some of the folks that are in position to create policy, whether it be in Illinois or other places within the country, that look at this, start to Dan is talking about policy versus individual choices, and I think the individual choices matter, but I also think that policy leaders have to do the exact thing that we're asking policy leaders to do, which is to lead. And to say, we're going to find a way to, in the case of Illinois with its 850-plus school districts, we're going to have to find a way to figure out how to make sure that this cleaving that we're seeing in places like Peoria and places across the state doesn't necessarily lead to the draining of resources from urban core school districts. I think we also need to think about housing policy and where we build and how we build. Even some of the solutions that we saw on the ground that you'll see in the series are well-intended, but they may not actually fix the issue of segregation. So we need to think about that. I think we need to think about larger policies of law enforcement. And I think policy leaders have to try to lead. And maybe, perhaps, if they do so, that can at least either mitigate or inspire people to make better individual choices around how we choose to live as a country.
That's Brian Charles along with Dan Vock. They're both reporters for Governing Magazine. And thanks to both of you for talking with us this week on Statewide.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.